Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. As promised, Dr. George Delgado here with us for a pro-life open forum. That means if you've got questions about the ethical and charitable care of human life from its earliest stages to its very last moments, and any time in between, maybe there is a particular illness that you'd like to ask about, or a treatment of a disability, or what's the ethical use of medications, of this or that type of medication. Whatever it is, you are welcome to call this hour, 888-318-7884. Of course, if you have questions about abortion or contraception or euthanasia, assisted suicide, all of those are part of the pro-life landscape because they are part of the attacks on life landscape, and we need to talk about all of them. Dr. George Delgado is the medical director of Culture of Life Family Services, and there's a lot of people walking around this world because of Dr. Delgado, and that's something I'd love to talk about. He's the guy that, with some other folks, brought us the abortion pill reversal, which is often... it's so weird. The abortion pill reversal, or maternity care centers. These are now the bad guys to the media. People saving lives and helping moms. These are the bad guys. Dr. George Delgado is also certified in bioethics from the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Dr. Delgado, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. It's wonderful to be here.
And what's the status now of the abortion pill reversal? That's where someone has taken at least the first pill for a chemical abortion, and you can actually, and the person says, no, that was a mistake, I shouldn't have done that. You can, with some success, reverse that.
Oh, actually with great success. So our success rates we've documented with our best protocols are 68%.
Whoa.
Survival of the baby to birth. And we've demonstrated to be very safe, effective, and women who choose the second chance at life are very, very grateful for that opportunity. And fortunately, there's no increased risk of birth defects, and the preterm birth rate is actually lower with women who've taken progesterone for abortion pill reversal than the general population.
Wow, that's kind of a weird side effect, but a woman can feel like the great thing about that statistic is it's not a hopeless situation. There's real hope that the baby will be fine, will be healthy, will come to full term, and can go on with life.
Absolutely, yes. The woman who undergoes this does not need to worry that there'll be any different risk of birth defects than anybody else in the general population. So it's just like once they're over their hump, it's like a regular pregnancy. Obviously there are psychological factors, and counseling and support is very important, and the whole social situation. But from a biologic standpoint, that baby is, once the baby survives the medical abortion and has the medical abortion reversed, everything's smooth sailing like a regular pregnancy would have been.
888-318-7884 is our number. If you have a question about the ethical treatment of life in any stage, 888-318-7884. I'm just so curious about this. Are more doctors using it? Is it finding a wider kind of acceptance among doctors who, like OBGYN doctors who might be in a position to be able to use this?
Absolutely. We're finding more and more doctors are comfortable with using it, comfortable recommending it. In the Abortion Pill Rescue Network that now is run by Heartbeat International, there are, I believe, now over 2,000 doctors registered in the network. And we know that other doctors who are not in the network are utilizing the protocols or coming up with their own protocols to reverse the mifepristone abortions. And we're happy to report that, Heartbeat International is happy to report that over 4,000 births have been documented after successful reversal. So the numbers are climbing. Women have been helped in all 50 states, in more than 70 foreign countries, different national networks are being started. So yeah, things are growing by leaps and bounds, and we're very excited about that.
I do want people, it's something to be very excited about. It's just wonderful news. It's good news. And we've had good news in the pro-life movement in recent years, but it has not been unmixed, the news. And by the way, if you want to talk about abortion, you're welcome to call. We'll talk about abortion, 888-318-7884. But you don't have to feel excluded if you have a question about a disability treatment or a medicine or treatment at the end of life. It's all on the table this hour, 888-318-7884. And I say that in part because I'm going to ask again about abortion, and because there's been such a change in the legal landscape of abortion in the United States. What are you seeing? What is the, where the rubber meets the road? What's happening?
Well, here's what's happened since the Dobbs case in June of 2022, which struck down Roe v. Wade. The entire landscape has changed, and we've become an even more polarized country. So the states that are pro-life, the states like Florida, Texas, Alabama, Arkansas, Utah, and many others, North Dakota, South Dakota, those states have become more pro-life because now they are able to ban many of the abortions, and many of them have, some of them throughout the pregnancy, many of them after heartbeats detected or other times. So that's been a great good. But on the other hand, the pro-death states, such as California, New York, Illinois, are doubling down on abortion and now are trying to recruit women from out of state to come and have their abortions in their states. We've also seen a proliferation of mail order and telemedicine mifepristone abortions, and this is thanks to the Biden administration deregulating all of mifepristone abortions, where before they had to be taken, the first pill, the mifepristone, had to be taken in front of a healthcare provider. That has been struck down, first temporarily under the pretense of the COVID-19 medical public health emergency.
Oh, right.
But since it's been made permanent. So now women can go online and do a telemedicine encounter and get mifepristone mailed to them. Or they can even just mail order without even doing even a semblance of a medical interaction. So this is presenting to us a great risks to women who are in crisis pregnancies. First of all, these women often will not have ultrasounds. So that can pose a couple of different problems. One is that they truly may not know how far along they are in the pregnancy. They may not even be pregnant, may be taking mifepristone really unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. They may be further along in the pregnancy and taking it when it shouldn't be taken. A woman might forget that she has an IUD in place, an intrauterine device. You should not take mifepristone if you have an IUD in place. Ultrasound would detect that, so that safety feature is taken away. The woman may not know that she has a tubal pregnancy, and we know that about 1-2% of all pregnancies in the U.S. are tubal pregnancies. These so-called ectopic pregnancies are very dangerous, and a woman should not take mifepristone if she has a tubal pregnancy. And when she starts to bleed, she may attribute the bleeding to what she was told about the mifepristone abortion, but in reality, the bleeding may be heralding tubal rupture. And that tube could rupture, she could delay medical treatment, she could die in the bathroom of her own home because she was not told that she has an ectopic pregnancy. Next, women will not be checked for their Rh status. And we know that women, 15% of all people are Rh negative. If a woman is Rh negative and the baby she's carrying is Rh positive, at the time of abortion, we know that blood mixes together. When that mixing occurs, then her system is sensitized to Rh positive blood. She mounts an antibody response, which doesn't really make a big difference for that baby who's aborted, of course. However, with subsequent pregnancies that are Rh positive, then a woman who has a wanted pregnancy that she's trying to carry to term, well, she will mount an immune response that will attack the baby's blood cells. That can cause in utero congestive heart failure and many times will lead to stillbirths. So she will be dooming herself to stillbirth after stillbirth after stillbirth of wanted pregnancies because she wasn't checked for her Rh status.
Good Lord.
And there are some social risks too that we can go into, and that would be that the the mail order or telemedicine mifepristone abortions will become the tools of sex traffickers, rapists, and child molesters. Because, you know, really anybody can get these drugs and then they'll use them, giving them to a woman either surreptitiously or forcing her to take it.
Yeah, but all of this is the landscape is so ideologically charged. I just think it doesn't. You could list even more evils, and they would still say no. This is because of, I don't know, safe, legal, and rare, or whatever sentence would be used. Very, very disturbing. We have callers on the line. I want to go to those callers. I got to take the first break. We'll take the first break. It's a pro-life open forum. Ask about the beginning of life, the end of life, any time in between. If you have questions about the ethical treatment of human life, Dr. George Delgado is here to take your calls. 888-318-7884.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
This is Anne, Program Director for Siouxland Catholic Radio, 88.1 FM. Catholic radio is more essential than ever. It provides spiritual guidance and insights and is a powerhouse of Catholic education, 24 hours per day, 365 days per year.
The world needs EWTN Catholic Radio, now more than ever.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Pro-Life Open Forum this hour. Our guest is Dr. George Delgado, the Medical Director of the Culture of Life Family Services and trained in ethics for the National Catholic Bioethics Center. We do appreciate your calls. And by the way, you don't have to be Catholic to call. If you have a question about life, if you have a question, an ethical question about how people deserve to be treated or should be treated in any stage of life, you're very welcome here. 888-318-7884. I'm going to go to Bonnie in Missouri, listening to 106.1 FM. Bonnie, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Okay, thank you for taking my call. Dr. Delgado, I recently lost my mother, and she was cared for by hospice nurses. And as she became less responsive, they started administering morphine under her tongue, and they did it routinely every 2 hours. And she was basically non-responsive, but the hospice nurses said that they do that for pain and anxiety. She didn't appear to be in pain except for when we tried to move her, but they also said, you know, it would, they didn't want her to be aware maybe what was happening to her because she might get really upset and get agitated and restless. And my problem is this is morphine that suppresses respirations, and I mean, it's almost like they're facilitating the death process. I hope you understand what I'm trying to say here, but I mean, are we supposed to be giving people morphine to help them to die, so to speak?
Dr. Delgado?
Yes, that's a very good question. And it's important to know that morphine, like other tools that we use, has a lot of benefits. It's an excellent medication for pain, especially at the end of life, as well as it alleviating the sensation of shortness of breath. It's very good for that. But it also has side effects, and you implied that if you give too much of the morphine, it can, what we call, blunt the respiratory drive so that the patient does not breathe as well, and that can shorten the life. So whenever morphine is used at the end of life, we have to be very careful. And the other thing that it can do is decrease the sense of awareness, like you said. So we have to be careful with that because we want people to be as alert and aware as possible so that they can have their full intellectual capabilities, so that they can pray and communicate with God as best as possible. Now, so with proper hospice care, then the morphine is used judiciously for people who have pain and for people who have shortness of breath. Sometimes it is given routinely if after giving it a couple of times to see how it works, and it works well, but then they see that it wears off. So they may do that and give it every 2 hours. And so I've used it that way myself, and that's perfectly appropriate. So what we must do, though, is make sure that we're giving it for those two reasons, to help with pain and to help with shortness of breath, and using the lowest effective dose possible. But at the same time, we realize and we invoke the principle of double effect, that that one drug can have two effects. One is to alleviate symptoms. The other is that it may decrease alertness, and it may decrease the life expectancy, lifespan, hasten death. But if there's no better way to treat the symptoms, then we can use that morphine judiciously, foreseeing that it may have those side effects, but knowing that we do not want those side effects. Now, having said that, with invoking the principle of double effect, it's also very interesting that there have been several studies, mostly in cancer patients, but in other patients too, where they had, for example, one group of patients with highly advanced lung cancer who got usual cancer care. The other group went into hospice. And the group that went into hospice actually, on average, lived longer. And that's because taking care of people's symptoms probably prolongs life, and it's good for them. So it's important to keep that in mind, too, that often people going on hospice will live longer because of the very good symptom control.
Bonnie, does that work for you?
It does. It helps me a lot because okay. I've really struggled with this. I just felt like, if they didn't appear to be in pain, if they didn't appear to be struggling to breathe, and they're just routinely giving it every 2 hours. My mother had kidney failure. So I knew that she wasn't able to really maybe clear this morphine out of her system. So, I was just questioning the fact that they just routinely okay, she looks like she's in pain, so let's give her some. I mean, just every 2 hours, every 2 hours, every 2 hours, they gave it. And she did indeed pass, but I just didn't know if, I guess your explanation for all of the good things about it, and yeah, it's kind of like walking the tightrope, I guess, but
yes.
What you said, Dr. Delgado, helped me a great deal. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thanks very much for the call. It's a pro-life open forum. If you have questions about the treatment of life in any stage, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Going to Stephen in Wichita, Kansas, listening on 1360 AM. Stephen, glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Yes, Dr. Delgado. First, I do want to say to Bonnie, I experienced that same situation with my mother a little over 2 years ago, and it is very conflicting, interiorly to know what the right thing to do is. It did relieve the pain, but I'm sorry to hear about the loss of your mother. And my question is, I've recently retired, and within about 6 months, I've picked up some volunteer work at our one of our local abortion clinics here, doing sidewalk counseling. And we seem to have, two extremes. And my personality is more to try to just befriend people as they come in and offer the literature that we give, which is very good literature to help women, even financially, if they need the help. But we do have those with the bullhorns, that tend to, to call for repentance. And, it seems to me, from what I've experienced, it seems to be to bring a negative reaction from people quite a bit. Even today, I experienced it with a lady bringing her daughter in. And I wondered if both approaches were appropriate or, what you, from your experience, what you might offer on that.
Yes, so I think you bring up a great point that context really matters in this situation. So remember that all conversions really take place in the context of relationships, whether that's relationship is just between you and God or if it's with family. And think about if you have a family member who's strayed away from the church or is going to have an abortion, would you get a bullhorn and start yelling at that person, hey, repent, repent, you're going to hell? That's not going to be very effective, right? Well, it's certainly not going to be effective when you're doing that to strangers. So I think what you have to do is we have to realize that we have to present the truth, but always present it charitably. And in my opinion, yelling on a bullhorn to repent is not a charitable presentation of the truth to a woman who's walking into an abortion center, who feels like she has no other options, who feels like she's trapped in a corner. So I really disagree with that approach. And I would advise, if you can be on the sidewalk at other times when that person with the bullhorn is not there, that would be preferable, unless you think you can clearly offer a kinder, more charitable alternative to that person. But you certainly don't want to seem like you're part of that. And I think you'll be very ineffective, and that person actually may be repelling those people and making them move faster into the abortion center, so having the opposite effect that is intended.
Stephen?
Having said that...
Sorry, doctor. I didn't realize you had more. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just have a little bit more. Having said that, if you do want to be a sidewalk counselor, I think if at all possible, you should get specialized training, because talking to these women, it takes a very specific skill set. And even like when I go in front of abortion centers, I pray, and I think prayer is the most powerful thing. And I think praying the rosary, and if you can pray on your knees, that's even more effective. But usually that there's a trained counselor who's the talker, who talks to these women. And so I'd recommend that you look up the group called Helpers of God's Precious Infants, or it's Helpers of God's Precious Children. And they have training programs specifically train you for that. So until you get that training, I'd recommend you simply pray. And if you have signs, have them be supportive signs, like, you know, Jesus loves you and your baby, or I'm here to help, things like that. Jesus is here to help. If you can't get that training, then and you have to be the one who talks to these women, or the situation comes upon you, then just, you know, be very, very charitable and just say, you know, there are people who want to help you. You don't have to have this abortion. Please don't think that this is your only choice. I think that's the approach that works. That's the approach that's charitable. I think that's the approach that God calls us.
I agree, doctor. That's the approach I try to take. Sometimes when we have another group there, you know, we may approach the car and they will actually roll down the window and take the literature. But then, you know, then as we're there, then another group will approach the car, you know, and it kind of counters what we're trying to do, is trying to be charitable, it seems like, to me anyway. I do want to get more formal training, I think, and because I do want to be able to help, and we try to offer that help to the women as they go in, you know. So thank you very much for that information.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you very much for the call and for the question. We got another, Steve on the line, this one in Virginia. Steve, it's a pro-life open forum. Go ahead with your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Hi. I'm a physician in the area, and I've been asked to prescribe the reversal pill, but was because my malpractice is covered by a local hospital, I had two problems. One was, would the hospital, if something happened, their insurance cover me? And second, has anybody ever been successfully sued when they prescribed this pill? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay, Steve, thank you.
Great. Thanks, Steve. And thanks for being there. I have been following this, and as well as Heartbeat International has been following this, and we are not aware of anyone ever having been sued at all for providing abortion pill reversal. And I think the reason why is because we really stress that to those physicians and other medical practitioners who are offering it to be very diligent, to be, first of all, well-trained and aware of how to provide the protocols, number one. Number two, to establish very good communication and forge very good patient-physician relationships. and to not cut any corners. So we're very, very diligent, very careful. And because of that, we offer not just highly ethical care, but the highest quality of care. So those are the things that really, I think, protect us from liability. And that's not to say no one will ever be sued, because, Steve, you knowing as a physician that good doctors have been sued and will be sued, because people sometimes get angry. And so that certainly can happen. And so that's why we want to make sure that we document things very well, because we think that this is very, very defensible. We have lots of medical literature and lots of experience over the years of using progesterone in both, not just in abortion pill reversal, but also in a very analogous situation of a threatened miscarriage, where it's been used very, very safely and effectively. So as far as your particular situation, I would you would need to look into that more. So I think in general, physicians who have coverage in order to take care of women in early pregnancies, and that would usually fall into usually internists and family physicians and OBGYNs, sometimes pediatricians, that their malpractice should cover them, because this is, like I said, a situation of a threatened abortion in early pregnancy, and so you take care of those already. It shouldn't be an issue.
We'll be right back.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity. In the early church was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
What if the voice of your deepest doubts about Catholicism rose up in the form of a human being and challenged you to defend your most foundational beliefs? That's the task apologist Trent Horn took upon himself in his new book, Devil's Advocate, a dialogue with his own best objections against the faith that he professes and defends. You can stand up against your doubts, and Trent will show you how. Pick up your copy of Devil's Advocate today at shop.catholic.com or at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As a child, the great theologian Thomas Aquinas asked, "What is God?" Best-selling author Kevin Vost's new book follows the mature thought of Aquinas in answering that question. In clear and approachable fashion, What is God examines God's attributes and considers questions about him that have vexed mankind for centuries. Order your copy of What is God today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Matt Swaim here. Monday on the Sunrise Morning Show, we'll take a look at this week in Catholic history with Kevin Schmiesing and get you all the latest news, weather, sports, and more. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. It's a pro-life open forum with Dr. George Delgado, who I rudely cut off just a moment ago because we had to go to the break. But Dr. Steve in Virginia was wondering about the possibilities of getting sued using the abortion pill reversal that you pioneered. And you were in the midst of answering him. I don't know if there was more you wanted to say.
Yeah, so I talked about the general concepts of no one's ever been sued, and I think the risk is low as long as you do things the right way. With his specific situation where his malpractice is covered by the hospital, I think then he has to see under what circumstances that malcoverage extends. That is, does he have an office practice? Is it covered there? In which case, he should be fine. If he practices outside of the office, helping a pregnancy help center, does he cover there? So those are the things I really did look at, just to make sure that you have coverage. But I think as long as you have coverage, No one's ever been sued, and thanks be to God, people are doing a great job and shouldn't be sued.
Thank you, Steve, again for that call. I'm going to go to Ireland now. It's a pro-life open forum. Ask whatever you like about life in any of its stages. Dominic's in Ireland watching on YouTube. Dominic, go ahead with your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Hello, how are you doing? Hope you are well.
Very well, thank you.
So I was born disabled, and I've always been looking for the answer in Catholicism. I've been looking for ages. If we are formed in the womb by God, then why are children born disabled? Thank you.
Okay, Dominic.
All right. Well, that's a very deep philosophical and theological question. The best explanation that I've heard regarding that is really that it all relates to the fall of Adam and Eve, where prior to the fall, that we were created really without flaws or defects. But then once Adam and Eve chose to rebel against God, then that introduced faults and what we call entropy, that is disorder, not just into our wills and intellects, but also into our physical bodies and into the material world. So really, it's our own fault. But of course, it's still important to remember that even though many of us have disabilities of varying degrees, that each and every one of us is still loved infinitely by God, and that we were all still creatures of God, and that if we are baptized, we are adopted sons and daughters of God, and no disability diminishes that in any way. The other thing to remember, and that's very important, is that our life here on earth will be short, and eternity will be forever, of course. We will have resurrected bodies, and our resurrected bodies will not have disabilities or defects. So that's what we can look forward to if we are in God's graces and we die in a state of grace and we follow God and choose to serve Him, and therefore we will live with Him forever and ever. So I think those are the best perspectives for why there are disabilities and what's to come of disabilities.
Okay, yeah. Thank you very much.
Dominic, thank you very much. I appreciate that call. Maybe we'll get to speak again. Lots of folks on the line for Dr. George Delgado. It's a pro-life open forum. You still can get a call in. We've got a couple lines open. If you'd like to ask a question about life in any of its stages, the ethical treatment of life in any of its stages, whether you're Catholic or not, whether you're Christian or not, Dr. George Delgado is here to answer those questions. 888-318-7884. Diana in Texas, you are up next. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Delgado.
Hi,
Diana.
Yes, Dr. Delgado, mine concerns end of life and an alarming situation that seems to be growing, which you may or may not be aware of, with regard to hospice care. And I just have to catch my breath because my mother passed away last year. She was 93. God bless her. Every cell in her brain still worked, but not her body so well. But no one got to say goodbye. And I don't know if you're familiar with medications used in hospice. And lorazepam is the one, I believe, that put my mother into a medically induced coma on top of the, morphine. My mother had been in the hospital for 3 days for Laetrile get the water off when you have like pulmonary hypertension and she needed that hospitalization. Yeah, and her doctor, the only reason that he put her on hospice was he was feeling, this is her cardiologist, she'd been with for a couple of years. And I was there when he explained to her, and she said, "Am I dying?" He said, no, not now. Your heart is getting weaker, Rosemary. But he said, "If I thought you were dying, I would have you here in the hospital on hospice. But I'm recommending that you go home on hospice back to your assisted living. And I understand they will have a level of care because they love you so much, and you've been there with them for so long that the nursing staff, whatever extra they're going to need to meet your needs. My mother had polio when she was pregnant with me, and so sure, her physical disabilities were great late in life. Okay, not, don't want to get too far off. So I was there, mom and I, sense of humor, she's making jokes, there was no problem. Saturday, I think she went home that evening, and she was put on hospice immediately, at, you know. And this is a Catholic hospital, so I had no, whatever reservations I had, I just, you know, didn't even think, because I've heard some stories about this before, and I didn't pay much attention to them. But the next day I didn't go because I had a cold and a cough, and I wanted to get a COVID test to be sure before I went to visit mom, but my brother did, you know, was there. And then when I came Sunday morning after Mass, my mother looked like she was dying. She was, like, gray, and she just looked horrible. And
well, let me ask you this, if I may. So, Diana, are you the sense I'm getting is that your concern is she wasn't that ill, but the medicines that they gave her precipitated her death?
Yeah.
Is that your concern?
Yes. I spent the night with her that night, and she kept complaining about stomach pains. She did not want the morphine. She had said, it's not helping me. And she refused the 10 o'clock dose. And I told the medical assistant, I said, listen, she's perfectly capable cognitively of making this decision if we change her mind. But I was with her, and she was just suffering so badly, couldn't get her in a comfortable position. And finally, it was a difficult night. She took the 130 dose. Indeed, that morphine didn't help. So at 5:30, I called my brother and I said, I need that nurse to call because mom needs some relief, you know. And so she put her on lorazepam.
Okay,
and
Dr.
Sure
Delgado,
enough,
is, do you
later,
have enough? Hang
mom.
On, Diana. I just need to know if Dr. Delgado has enough to respond, or do you need more information?
Well, I guess if you can just kind of wrap up your story, tell me, did they ask you if they could put what's called palliative sedation on her, or did they just give her lorazepam and give little by little, or what exactly happened?
No, they gave her the lorazepam that morning. The nurse told me on the phone. Nobody came over to look. No nurse, nothing. And then she said, well, we'll give her some medication that'll help her sleep. And it was lorazepam. And she said in about 30 minutes she'll be sleeping. Well, she was. Well, at 1:15 that afternoon, she was dead. And my brother, when he came in the morning, you know, I woke up because, you know, I'd gone home to sleep. And I got up about 1:30, and there was a message from my sister-in-law, and she said, your mom died at 1:15. I called her. I said, Sandy, I said, I'm so glad you're not suffering anymore. And Sandy said, well, your brother never got to say goodbye. Well, you know what? Neither did I.
Okay. Dr. Delgado?
Yeah, so, first of all, I'm sorry that you had this very difficult situation. I know it must have been just heart-wrenching. So lots of things here that I can't really make an assessment about just from what you've told me. But let me just hit on a few things, just sort of principles. Number one, if you think that she was not treated appropriately, then I think the first thing for you to do would be to check with the cardiologist who it sounds like you trust and just find out what his opinion was. Did he think they treated her well, or did they overdo it with the lorazepam? And certainly if he thinks that maybe they overdid it with the lorazepam, then that's a reason to maybe file a complaint and look into it more. However, as far as the general principle, you talked about medically induced coma. Often we use the term in hospice and palliative medicine as palliative sedation. And medical induced coma is more used for people, for example, who have bad trauma and are in a neuro ICU. Similar situations as far as the sedation, but different terms we usually use. And palliative sedation is used in hospice and palliative medicine, but it's generally used under very strict protocols. And that's where the hospice where I work, we use very, very strict protocols. And it's only used when all other measures to relieve physical symptoms have been inadequate. And it's not used for what we call existential suffering, and that's when someone is suffering because, you know, they know they're getting close to death. But, for example, if someone has severe pain or severe agitation or severe shortness of breath, and we've tried all the usual medicines, they're still suffering, then we have a conference with the patient, if the patient can participate, with the family, with all the team, and say, look, here's where we are. we can do this. We can put give the patient medication, usually oftentimes lorazepam and maybe some morphine, sometimes other medicines, to induce sleep and so that the symptoms are controlled. Now, with palliative sedation, again, we apply the principle of double effect. The intent and the primary effect is that symptoms are relieved that could not be relieved in any other fashion. The foreseen but unwanted consequences, the other effect is that death may be hastened. And so if the family and the patient, if the patient can participate, if the family agrees that this is something to go forward, then we carefully do it. Then we watch the patient. Once we get the symptoms under control, then we try to back off on the doses. If the patient is still doing well, you know, after a day or two, then we try to remove the palliative sedation, because oftentimes, especially with pain, if you get the pain under control, you kind of reset the receptors, and then we can go back to normal pain medications for control of it. So that's the usual and ethical way that palliative sedation is done. Is it misused? I'm sure it is sometimes. And so when it is misused, then we have to call those people out. We have to make formal complaints and make sure that that there's accountability.
Diana, thank you for the call. I hope that was helpful to you. We have to take our break. We'll do that, and we'll be right back with more Pro-Life Open Forum with Dr. George Delgado.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
If it's central to the faith, you can find it on EWTN Podcast Central, featuring the best of EWTN radio, as well as faith-filled podcasts from our friends and affiliates across the nation, all in one place, all free. The destination for great Catholic audio programming is EWTN Podcast Central. It's like podcast heaven. Visit EWTN.com/radio/podcasts today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Dr. George Delgado is our guest. You can find out about him at the Culture of Life Family Services. He's trained as an ethicist, trained as a physician and a palliative care physician, as well as OBGYN, right? OBGYN and palliative care?
Family medicine and palliative
care. Family medicine and palliative care. You are welcome to call with your questions, 888-318-7884. Heather is in Michigan, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Heather, thank you very much for the call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Delgado.
Thank you. Hi, how are you guys?
Very well. Thank you, Heather.
I'm calling because I was born and raised Catholic, but the last couple of years I've become what I believe is a practicing Catholic. So I've gotten much more involved in my faith. Me, my husband, and my kids go to Mass weekly, and we have four kids. So I'm struggling with, and I feel like I know the answer, obviously, but I'm trying to figure a way around it. Okay. I have an IUD. I've had an IUD in for 4 or 5 years. And I'm comfortable. I don't want any more kids. We have a full house here. I'm 40 years old. My husband would love another child, but I'm comfortable with four. However, I'm struggling with the fact that I'm receiving the Eucharist on a weekly basis. I do go to confession, but I don't confess that, not because I'm uncomfortable confessing it, because it doesn't come to my mind as, okay, I'm sinning. So am I wrong? First of all, am I in mortal sin when I'm taking the Eucharist because I have this IUD? And I know natural family planning is out there, but I don't know much about it, and I can learn it, but I'm afraid that something will happen. I'll have another kid. So I'm struggling with this. And, one other thing I'm struggling with is I'm pro-life. I've been my whole life, but I'm struggling with the fact that this IUD, does that make me not pro-life? You know, it's a gray area.
Okay. Dr. Delgado?
Yeah. Well, Heather, I'm so glad that you called. Thanks be to God for His great mercy. So let's lots of good points here. First of all, the IUD does have abortifacient potential, so it can cause very early undetected abortions. That's the first thing. It's not entirely contraceptive. That's the first thing. The second thing is that IUD is never when it's used for contraception, is never morally acceptable, never, ever. And therefore, once you have full knowledge of that, and you still leave the IUD in, and you have intercourse, then it is mortal sin. So objectively, it is always mortal sin. But once you're aware of it, then it really is on you and anybody else who knows who is in that situation. So I would say that until you get that IUD out, you need to stop having relations with your husband. That's starting today. Number two, yes, you need to go to confess it right away. And now that you know this, you should not receive the Holy Eucharist until you've gone to confession. Write it down so you remember this should be the first thing on your list. And you confess it, and you make a plan to have the IUD removed. Then you can go and receive our Lord in the Eucharist again, but again, still abstaining until you have that IUD removed. The next point I want to hit is that you said you don't want any more kids, and I can understand that. You have four kids, and you're 40 years old. However, I would humbly propose that you're asking the wrong question, that you're stating the wrong statement. It shouldn't be, if you want more kids, it should be, God, do you want us to have more kids? Because remember, you and your husband are stewards of your fertility, stewards of your family, not the masters of your fertility and not the masters of your family. God is the master. So he's put the two of you in charge for him. So the two of you should prayerfully discern whether you should have more children. And remember, the default really is, and Humana Vitae tells us very clearly, the default is that, yes, you will be open to more kids every time you have intercourse. But there may be times when you discern that now is not the time to have more children. In that case, then you can avail yourselves of natural family planning. And that would be the alternative to the IUD if you discern that God does not want you to have more children at this time. And so you should get to learn natural family planning. It's highly effective at avoiding pregnancy, as effective as the birth control pill and the IUD. There are lots of different methods out there. There's the couple-to-couple league, Symptothermal. There's the Creighton model. There's the Marquette method. Go online, find those, or talk to the people at your Office of Family Life in your diocese. So those are the things that I advise. Does that make sense to you?
It does. And I felt and I knew, but I didn't know. I'm like, okay, I'm taking the Eucharist, but this would have to be a mortal sin. So at this point, I have to stop taking the Eucharist until I confess and remove the IUD, and then I can go back to receiving the Eucharist.
Yes, and you also have to stop the sin of contracepting, so that means you abstain from intercourse until you have the IUD removed. That's the other part of it. So good for you. You're on a great path. So just, and remember, just trust in the Lord. Put it in his hands. He will take care of you better than any IUD could have taken care of you.
Heather, I
trust. I always do.
Oh, praise God. What a beautiful, receptive thing to say. That's a beautiful thing. Heather, I'd love to send you a book we have called Inseparable, Five Perspectives on Life in Defense of Humanae Vitae. It's just a wonderful read. I think you'll enjoy it, but it also is very, very informative. I just want to clarify one thing, Doctor. Heather goes to confession and refrains from intercourse until the IUD is removed and schedules that. So long as she's done those things, she can go to communion. She does not have to actually have had the IUD removed. Am I correct in that?
Well, if she's having relations while the IUD is still in place, then that would be objectively morally evil.
Right, but that's what I was saying, is that if she has scheduled it to be removed and she's not engaging in intercourse.
Yes, then absolutely. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, okay. I just didn't want you waiting too long, Heather, if you're morally in an okay position, just physically not where you want to be yet. Thank you very much, Heather, for the call. I believe we can get at least one more call in here with Dr. Delgado. And I'm trying to remember where I'm going. I think we're going to Elizabeth here in California. Elizabeth, thank you very much for the call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Delgado.
Hi, I thank you so much for taking my call, and I do appreciate your excellent service in your field. I wanted to give a different perspective that was both personal as well as professional in terms of the abuses that have been going on, not only in hospice but with morphine. And one was with my father-in-law, who was inappropriately given both a combination of morphine and a benzo for Lou Gehrig's. And, you know, my husband and I would visit, and we had seen that one of the staff would hide a pill on one side with a generic morphine and say it was, a vitamin. But it did end his life, and we'd just seen him 3 days before. And the second was one of my professors, who was a brilliant professor, who had cancer, and just a man of phenomenal faith. And he was about to be interviewed in 45 minutes. I'd spoken to him the day before, just because he did have cancer and he was going to have pain. But I was stunned to find this newspaper article that said it was just two doctors discussing the dose of morphine. And this journalist who was going to honor, his wife had been killed and he'd been in a car accident from, tragically, a guy that, you know, was just driving impaired, you know, 2 in the afternoon near the university where he
So, Elizabeth, we're getting close to the end.
So the problems have been that I think that I wanted to alert you to is at national meetings, I've been watching this for a number of years. I'm both primary care and psychiatry. I've been watching the way they've been teaching hospice, but also the way they're teaching standards in the primary care level. And a few years ago in San Diego, there was a national meeting, and they said straight out, they would deliberately miseducate the next generation of doctors. And there would be saving money for the government, and there would be deaths. The abuses that have been going on, both in California and Oregon, I want to observe, those test cases were people who had depression, who were not medically evaluated for causes of depression, were allowed to be medicated to death as test cases.
Elizabeth, I think I get the point is that the hospice is being abused, and I want to get Dr. Delgado's response. So if you'll hang on, we'll get a response. We'll make sure we have enough time to get it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there are abuses out there. There's no doubt about it. I've seen it. I've seen what I would term soft euthanasia, where feedings are stopped or medications are given excessive amounts. So I think it's our job, when we see those things, we have to call them out, and we have to make sure that these people are held accountable. We have to maintain the standards in our medical profession of first doing no harm, and that's very important. There's a great group called the Alliance of Hippocratic Medicine that has been started within the last 2 years. A number of different member organizations are participating in that, including Catholic Medical Association. And so I would urge you to be active in the Catholic Medical Association, as well as other groups, including Christian Medical Dental Association, American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs, and the Coptic Orthodox Medical Association. So we really are fighting to reclaim the Hippocratic basis of medicine, and that is to do what we can to help our patients, but to never, ever kill our patients, whether they're pre-born or have already been born.
Elizabeth, that's what you're getting at?
Yes, very much. Thank you. The thing that I've found is in terms of reporting it, there have been constraints that have been placed in California, but also in Oregon, where that happened to another family member. And it was actually in the Catholic hospital. They covered it up, and I actually talked to somebody that was, an official there, and they said, well, of course they're going to be doing that. And that's been the problem that we've had is that, many people that are trying to speak up have had, a flagrant, lack of, thank you that this group has started, but I just wanted to alert you to that because I've been doing this journey for quite some time and finding an impasse. So thank you very much.
Would you say that?
Can you repeat that one again?
Go ahead. Say repeat what again?
Well, the thing that's been hard for me is that many people who are boots on the ground who have phenomenal ethics have not been as aware as I have because I really felt like this was.
What was it that you wanted Dr. Delgado to repeat?
So repeat that new organization and then also how, the outliers can be reported. There's got to be a kind of a way.
Okay, Dr. Delgado.
Sure. Yeah, so Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine is the new organization. And, the outliers, the best way to report would be, there are many different, but, every report to the medical board, in your case, the Medical Board of California, will be investigated. And so that's always a sure way. I've made reports to the medical board and also to your hospice hospital ethics committee, or if it's a medical group or and a complaint to the third-party payer. All of those are avenues that you can use to hold people accountable.
Elizabeth, thank you very, very much for the call. We almost got to everybody. Sorry, we did not get to everybody, but Dr. George Delgado has been our guest. You can see what he does at the Culture of Life Family Services, part of a growing movement of doctors, Catholic and non-Catholic alike, who are devoted to providing medical care in a way that is ethical and not innovative with morals, but respectful of human life. Dr. Delgado, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. It's been great being here.
All right. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here, Catholic Answers Live.